Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. The U.S. stock market has bounced back from its August correction. Canadian stocks hit record highs, and gold had a great week. Ross also looks at silver, crude, and the U.S. and Canadian dollars. Who will win the U.S. presidential election? Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, weighs in on that. He also tells us why he's hot on gold, but not that keen on the U.S. dollar. Gerald also warns of the dangers of putting too much pressure on certain world leaders. The senior editor of WeissRatings.com, Sean Broderick, checks in from Florida to chat about glowing prospects for uranium and his outlook for gold, silver, and high tech. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show.
As always, it's a pleasure, Jim.
How did we do on the stock markets this week?
Well, this was pretty much a good week, pretty much all week long. And as it is, in terms of the indices, I guess the Canadian market was pretty much the best of the bunch, had a really good finale at the end there. U.S. market, S&P is pretty good. We're back up to 5,600 after that shakeout in the early part of August that took us momentarily under 5,200. Now, this 5,600 area is still the top end of that 100-year-long channel, you know, we want to see how it does trying to push through at this point. Seasonality-wise, we're at that tough stretch where from here through some point by the end of October, you'd expect to find a decent correction and a good buying opportunity. So, you know, we're looking for that on the outside for the indices. But if you look at you know, the rotation that started when the Magnificent Seven took their hiccups starting in May and June. The industrials, the financials, utilities, the REITs, and the bonds have just been doing exceptionally well here. Each of those categories into multi-year, if not all-time highs. So, you know, there's always a bull market somewhere, and when the hot money decides it's time to move, they take a look for value, and that's what they found in some of these other sectors out there. So, as long as there is momentum, you don't fight the trend, but at some point here in, I would suggest in the next week or two, you know, going to be time to take some money off the table. We're not overbought on the daily or weekly charts right now, so there's some upside room.
What's going on with gold?
Record highs, $2,580 for the spot price. We were up 14% on the week, which is just a fabulous week. Silver was up 9% on the week. And, you know, here we've had a real lid around the $2,450 to $2,500 level on gold for the better part of a couple of months. You know, we topped out back in May, had a sideways consolidation, then topped out again in August and had 4 or 5 weeks of consolidation. Of note, you know, this has been fighting what had been a strong U.S. dollar coming off the bottoms here a couple of weeks ago. And during the strength in the U.S. dollar, gold gave back very little. We had gone from, call it, 25.20, only dropped to maybe 24.80 in that 2-week trading range. In the meantime, the dollar had been rallying back quite well, and we got to the point where the U.S. dollar index was up to its 20-day moving average at the same time that gold had pulled back to its rising 20-day moving average. The key in terms of the relationship that I've been looking at is that if the dollar can push through its recent resistance levels here, and ideally that would be seeing it move through, call it 102 on the index, that would turn the 20-day moving average up. It's been trending down, and it has been overhead resistance. Now, if it upticks through that resistance, it should put more than just a lid on the gold market. That should be enough to take some real wind out of this run that we're having right now. But the dollar, we're sitting at 101 and change as we close off the week. And that drop from, call it, 102 down to 101 was enough to allow the breakout as far as the gold and silver were concerned. And along with that, the miners have had just an excellent stretch here as well. The GDXJ, the Junior Gold Miner ETF, is at a multi-year high. We're back to where we were in the first quarter of 2022. This thing has come from a low of 27 just over a year ago, a low of 32 earlier this year, and it's now at 49. So that's a pretty good move for the index. And it's a bit of catch up that has been necessary because it's still well off the highs than when gold had its original peak back in 2022. But the trend is up and looks healthy for now. The one thing to be concerned about is that from a seasonal perspective, August is usually the best month of the year. September tends to be a month of pulling back, and your best buying opportunities end up being around November, December. So if this one gets a little tired on the upside or maybe gets exhausted, I'd be looking to take some money off the table there. It's been just an excellent run, so it might pay to lighten up if we tack on another week like this one.
What's going on with the little old Canuck buck?
The Canadian dollar has had a really good run from the bottom at 71 and change. That run was all related to such bearish attitudes out there. The commitment of traders numbers, speculative positions were the biggest net short position in history. And so we ended up with this rally, a 2.5 cent rally in the currency, got overbought 10 days ago, has pulled back. And at this point, you're looking at a pretty good support level as to where we came back. 73.5 had been the top from May through the middle of August. We've been up there and tested it three times. Popped through it, and now we've come back to test that support area. Overall, a little concerned about the longer-term trend, but on a short-term basis, this is a pretty good low right in here to look for a decent bounce.
What's going on in the crude market?
Crude oil, we got some really good oversold readings into the early part of this week. The daily level got down to $65.5, and that produced some oversold enough. I mean, you're back to where we were in May of 2.5 years ago. Very, very dramatic move. You know, from we have come from the mid-80s down to the mid-60s in a span of just 3 months. So a bounce in here back towards, I would say, 71 looks reasonable. But from a seasonal perspective, you want to be looking for this thing to continue to ease lower in the coming months.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Gerald Celente, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, available online at trendsjournal.com. He's speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Gerald, it's been a while. It's great to have you back on This Week in Money.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Can you tell us about the latest issue of the Trends Journal and how people can subscribe?
Well, you know, it's the grand total of about $2.56 a week. And there's no magazine like it in the world. If anybody could show me, let me see it. You know, we cover geopolitics, economics, technocracy, AI. We have these are special sections. This week's Trends Journal, by the way, is 230 pages and no ads. So we don't tell you what, you know, nobody tells us what to do. And very important, when, you know, we do top trends each year. And one of our top trends this year was a golden year for gold. And gold is shining, just as we had forecast. And this is the beginning of the run-up. As we're speaking, gold is selling at $2,582.20 an ounce. When we made this forecast on January, the beginning of January, when we come out with our new forecasts, gold was selling at $2,041 an ounce. So gold is up nearly $550 from when we made that forecast. And again, there were other people that were saying gold was going to go up. No magazine, no media said this was going to be a golden year for gold. And it's going to go much higher. We can see gold hitting $3,000 by the end of this year, early next year, going to $4,000 an ounce. I bought gold back in the late 1970s. It was about $163 an ounce. We're seeing now what happened back in the late 70s and very early 80s with gold prices spiking. This is different than any other time, though, because it's the beginning of the death of the dollar. The lower interest rates fall, the deeper the dollar goes, the higher gold prices go. End of story.
And Gerald, just to point out how accurate you've been, you had the Ukraine being invaded, 9 months before it actually happened? Almost a year.
Well, what we did was, going back, people have no idea. You go back to our Trends Journal back to 2014. About the United States overthrow of the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine. And John McCain and Victoria Nuland handing out cookies in Maidan Square as the revolution was going on. And people have no idea of the deal that was made between Gorbachev when the Soviet Union broke up and George Bush Sr. You could look it up. NATO will not move one inch further. There were 16 NATO countries back then. Now there were 32. So if the Russians were up in Canada and the Chinese were down in Mexico with missiles aimed at America, oh, we'd be happy. So it's the war machine just keeps ramping it up. And what we said, World War III has already begun. And again, it goes back to gold. You know, one of the issues that are driving gold prices up are the fear of the geopolitical crisis, and gold is the number one safe haven asset. And again, very few are talking about that.
Occupy Peace, the Peace and Freedom Rally, is being held in Kingston, New York, Saturday, September 28th. Can you tell us about it and how people can attend?
When they go to Occupy Peace, occupypeace.com, we want to get a million people here. Scott Ritter is going to be here. Judge Andrew Napolitano, Max Blumenthal, Anya Parampil, and others. And World War III has begun. There's going to be a false flag event. Something is going to happen that's going to make it, quote, official. It's just like World War II. Google it up. Franklin Roosevelt seizes Japanese assets. Google it up. You can come a History Today, mainstream media. Mainstream. In July of 1941, remember, Japan bombs Pearl Harbor in December, Franklin Roosevelt seized all Japanese assets in America. And along with the Dutch and the British, they cut off three-quarters of Japan's global trade and 88% of their imported oil. They only import 100%. You know why they did this? Because those dirty Japanese invaded French Indochina. Wait a minute. Who made up this name, French Indochina? What are the French doing in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia? Oh, we're robbing their tin, their rubber, their anything we can, rape, pillage, steal. And how dare those Japanese go in there? I didn't know this until 2 years ago. I didn't know this. There's going to be a false flag event that's going to make it official. And again, Pearl Harbor made it official. And can't understand why the Japanese bombed it after the United States cut off all their oil. They import 100%, cut off 88%, killed their trade. Again, you got maniacs in charge. And the Israel war and the Ukraine war are going to keep ramping up. And that's going to keep driving gold prices up. And this is very important. Should Iran get involved in this war, and the United States has said they're going to send weapons to go deeper into Ukraine, and they're going to start striking oil fields, oil depots, refineries, etc. And if Iran gets involved in it, you're going to see the price of oil go up to like $130 a barrel, and that's going to crash the global economy and the equity markets. And again, that'll push gold prices skyrocketing.
Mm-hmm. Now, is silver going to enjoy the same kind of boost that you expect for gold?
No, we don't see it. It hasn't happened, and it's going to go up. There's no question about it, but it's not going up like gold. Again, gold is the number one safe haven asset. As central banks buy up gold. They don't buy silver. And you're looking, as you well know, and the people listening well know, the central banks are on a buying spree of gold.
Is that because they anticipate the BRICS adopting a 40% gold-backed currency called the unit?
That's part of it. It's also the decline of the dollar. And the lower interest rates go, the deeper the dollar falls. The deeper the dollar falls, the higher gold prices go. And the BRICS you're talking about, they've had enough of the United States' socioeconomic and geopolitical hegemony. So they're going to, this is the beginning of the death of the dollar. And again, the deeper the dollar falls, the higher gold prices go, because gold is dollar-based, and it's cheaper for other countries to buy gold when the dollar weakens.
Countries like Canada, the UK, dumped all their gold several years ago. We don't have any. While China and Russia have been stockpiling it for over a dozen years, are countries in the West that got rid of gold going to regret it?
Of course they are. Of course they are. And again, we the people of the United States, we're not permitted to know what kind of gold the United States is holding. They won't tell us.
Isn't Fort Knox supposed to be overflowing with it?
That's what I mean. Nobody's allowed to go there. I mean, this is America. You know, this is the country that brings freedom and democracy to other countries when you don't have it here. And again, when we're talking about death of the dollar, just the interest payments on the national debt, it's over $1 trillion, and the deficit keeps swelling. You know, it's ridiculous. It's edging closer to $2 trillion for the full year. So this is serious. I mean, who could actually be in business having deepened debt and getting worse and worse by the minute? So the whole thing's rigged, and the rig's going to be breaking.
It seems the only way to get elected in the United States, though, is to promise more tax cuts. How can you attack the deficit if you're continually cutting taxes?
Well, again, that's just political talk.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a political atheist. I don't like the entire system. It's a crime syndicate to me. And you look at Trump when he gave the tax breaks down in 2017. It was under the BS that he was going to lower the tax of big corporations so they would have capital improvements and invest in America. You know what they did? 2018 was a record year of stock buybacks. So that's all it is. It's just enriching the rich. The plantation workers of slave land, you will get minor cuts. And again, this is just political propaganda. They lie their way into office.
Could stock markets move higher into 2025 and even 26?
You know, we don't see that happening. And again, it's they're overvalued now. And there's going to be a crisis. The crisis is coming. Look at the data. I mean, why are oil prices so low? This isn't rocket science. The oil prices are so low because the global economy is so weak. And the only reason they went up just, you know, a couple of bucks was because of, the U.S. production slowed because of the hurricane, after the hurricane. That's nothing. Again, you're looking at China going into a very, very serious downswing. And you got Germany, the third largest, that's number two, China. It's basically in a recession. So Wall Street and Main Street, there are no connections between the two of them. Look, you got three companies, BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, that own 88% of the S&P 500. So it has nothing to do with reality.
What do you think the Fed will do with interest rates this week?
That's a guess. It's either 25 basis points or 50 basis points. And right now, you know, with gold prices going up so sharply, you know, they're betting on a 50 basis point rate cut. And again, they're definitely going to cut it, and they'll cut it again in October in the run-up to the presidential reality show. They want to boost the markets as much as they can so the street looks good. Again, you have the former Fed head is the United States Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. They want to keep the people in power in power. And that shows you who's running the country. The Federal Reserve head is now the Treasury Secretary. That's who got the dough.
What do you think the real rate of inflation is, and could we be in stagflation?
Well, you know, you look at shadow stats, it's double what they say. And we don't see stagflation. Stagflation is a stagnant economy with rising inflation. We see dragflation, a declining economy, and rising inflation. Again, the inflation numbers coming out are nothing but BS. You look at... Everybody knows in the real world all the cost of auto insurance on and on and on going up. Oh, inflation didn't go up that high last month. Wait a minute, the prices didn't go down. The prices are still way high. Look at the average price of a home, the median price of a home in the United States since 2020 has gone up, ready? Almost 50%. 50%. How much did the wages go? Probably when you put in inflation, they went down. So no, this is serious. It's going to be dragflation, declining economic growth, and rising inflation.
Is another word for that recession?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Again, the economy is going to go down, and it's not stagflation. It's a stagnant economy. It's going to be a declining economy, and inflation is going to keep rising. And again, the lower the interest, more they lower interest rates, the higher inflation goes.
Do interest rates tend to move higher in waves?
You know, it's a guessing game. You know, it's what the Fed's going to do when they want to do it. And they're going to do it, as we said, everybody knows it. The streets, you know, saying 25 basis points in this week.
Could banks going bust be a canary in the coal mine for what's ahead?
It is, and no one's talking about it. We're the only ones that have forecast it. The banks are going to go bust because of the commercial real estate crisis. your office occupancy rate, meaning people in the office, according to Castle Systems, that's with a K, 48.9%. 48.9%. Your office vacancy rate in the United States is at 24%. Vacant. Nobody there. San Francisco, about 35%. It was only about 4% before the COVID war. Boston, about 25%. 27%. New York City, 24%. Vacant. How are the owners of the buildings going to pay their debt? Which, by the way, these are interest rate-only debt. So the interest rates are double from when they bought the buildings. And now the debt's coming up, $4 trillion of debt over the next 2 years. No one is talking about the defaults, and they're artificially pushing them ahead, trying to cover it up. So that there's going to be a banking bust that's going to crash the global economy and the global equity markets. And look what happened when three banks crashed in 2023. Silicon Conman Valley Bank, First Republic, Signature Bank. Gold prices skyrocketed and the market tanked. That's three banks. Now you're going to look at 300 banks.
Looks like the border czar has let in a bunch of dog and cat eaters. Do you think the election fraud machine that now has lights shining brightly on it will be able to deliver for the left?
Oh, yeah. Well, we forecast that back in end of July, July 25th. We sent out a special trend alert. Again, we're political atheists. I haven't voted for anybody since Ron Paul, 2012. It's going to be Harris. And the issue we wrote in that Trends Journal back in 2022 in May, it's all there for everybody to read. We said the Republicans weren't going to do good in the midterm elections, even though Biden's popularity is way down and the people are dissatisfied with the economy, because of their anti-abortion stance. And we said Kamala Harris is going to start hitting the campaign trail. Again, this is going back to 2022, and that Biden won't be running. And Kamala Harris is she has two issues. Again, this is 2022. She's going to be pro-abortion, attack the anti-abortionists, and pro-Ukraine war. And that's exactly what happened 2 years later. So now you just got to go by the numbers. You have 67% of Americans are pro-abortion. And when you look at the debate, that was a big issue. And Trump's on the other side. Again, it's not what you like, what you want, what you wish for. It's what is. We're trend forecasters. So you look at the numbers, she's going to get the woman vote, first woman president. She's going to get the black vote. She's going to get a lot of Hispanic vote. And again, it's the dependency, of course, of the swing states, but we believe they're going to swing her way.
Are office buildings in the bust part of a boom-bust cycle, or is there a structural change underway?
No, it's a structural change, because what happened when they locked everybody down and people were staying home week after week, month after month, year after year, and they're getting up in the morning, they say, oh my God, I've been getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to travel an hour and a half each way to work. What, am I out of my mind? I'm not doing it anymore. Cost me all that misery and money. And then now, let's say I got 10 stories I'm renting out in the building, and I got people working in cubicles. I don't see them anyway. Yeah, stay home. I don't need all this space. No, this is unprecedented. And very important, very important. Again, we only go by the data. This isn't what we're saying, what the facts are saying. Buildings built in the last 50 years are non-convertible to apartments. They're big empty spaces. Here, a building on 50th Street, Midtown Manhattan, that sold for $320 million in 2006, went up for auction last month, and it was sold for $8.5 million, lost almost 98% of its value. It's a big empty space. It's in the middle of a block. There are no windows on one side, no windows on this other side, no windows in the back. These are non-convertible. They're big empty spaces.
What's the trend for the housing market going forward?
It's going to stay up unless there's a crisis. If there's a, as I said, when the banking crisis hits, everything's going to go down, but we don't see housing crashing. The prices will go down, but it's not going to be like what's going to happen to the office buildings and commercial real estate.
Protectionism seems to be rampant now with massive tariffs. Is that the way to deal with trade imbalances?
Well, they're going to be more. The trade imbalances are a result of globalization. And you're going to start seeing more and more nations putting tariffs on goods as they become more self-sustaining. Like you take China. They got 1.4 billion people. they don't need anything made in the UK, made in Germany, made in USA, or made anywhere else. It's got to be made in China. You're going to see more and more nations becoming populous nations and self-sustaining and self-sufficient. Look what happened. The proof is right there. When the Ukraine war began, the sanctions that they put on Russia, Biden said Putin's going to pay the price. He didn't pay the price. All those companies that left, the Russians filled them up with their own people. They have the human and natural resources to be very self-sufficient. And that's what you're going to see more and more of. Their economy went up. They're not suffering. So that's what you're going to start seeing in China. And more and more, there's going to be more and more nationalization, self-sufficient, self-sustaining. Same thing in America. We have all the human and natural resources we need. We don't have to... Here, take a country like Vietnam, and I grew up during the Vietnam War. Those dirty commies, you know, if we don't stop them, the dominoes are going to fall, and they're going to take over all the Asia. Oh, now we're dealing with Vietnam, still communist, and that's our second biggest importer of clothing and shoes. So think about it. Imagine if we weren't importing items from China and cheap labor countries, or NAFTA. They brought things down to Mexico. Once upon a time, you had what you called factories in America, and now these they've all gone rust belt. And by the way, what's going on with all these Haitians, for instance, moving to places like Springfield, Ohio, you're going to start seeing these rust belt areas bounce back as a result of the many immigrants coming in and also people leaving big cities because of the rise in crime. Again, brought to you by the COVID war. It wasn't like this before. As I say, when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it.
The Trudeau government has imposed carbon taxes on fossil fuels with the idea that it's going to drive people to buy electric cars. But on the other hand, it's imposed a 100% tariff on electric cars. What kind of a message is that?
Well, that's from China. They're stupid. I mean, they're a bunch of jerks. And again, you look at one of our top trends for 2024. One of them is EVs go FU. Look at the data. And people aren't. The reason they're buying them in China is because they're giving them subsidies. Again, we've been writing going back to 2016 about the inefficiency and how EVs are not going to replace fossil fuel, you know, cars. And the facts are there. We write about it each week. Company after company cutting back, and the numbers going way down.
Gerald, previously you mentioned a possible black swan event that's going to just turn the world on its ear. Any idea what that might be or could be or events?
You don't know. You know, it could be like another 9/11, real or fake. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you're going to get. And it's going to happen. There's no question about it. Again, World War III has already begun. And it's just going to make it... you just had this little clown boy Blinken over there, our Secretary of State, and the little jerk-off over there in the UK saying that we're going to send more weapons into Kyiv so they could bomb deeper into Russia. I mean, you're at war. If I asked you, I said, listen, give me a gun. I want to go blow my neighbor's brains out. And you gave me the gun. You're an accessory to the crime. And Putin is saying if they get these weapons and they start using them, we're at war with NATO and the United States. He said it.
How can our listeners find out more about Occupy Peace and subscribe to the Trends Journal?
Just go to trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. It's the only magazine where you're going to read history before it happens. And Occupy Peace, we have all the information about the rally. Please try to come here. We really need peace because these maniacs are going to drive us to nuclear annihilation.
Do we need John Lennon to sing again? All we're saying is give peace a chance.
Yeah, we need it. We need something. Matter of fact, we came up with new peace songs, too. This is a different time. And this is very, very, again, don't believe me, Google up the Samson option, SAMSON. Israel says if they start losing, they go nuke. And they're going to start losing. You don't have to be good at math to figure it out. With 90 million Iranians and 9 million Israelis, You go by the numbers, and then you got this thing ramps up. It's the end of life on Earth. Same thing with Ukraine. We have crazy people in charge. As I say, what's your favorite war? The Peloponnesian War? No, I like the Hundred Year War. Oh, the War of Roses was just lovely. What's your favorite crusade? Well, I like this first better than the eighth. I mean, you know what I'm talking about? You got crazy people running the show. And if we don't stop it, we're finished.
Well, we had World War II, 60 million dead. Now Japan and Germany are our best friends.
Yep, that's what I said. It's a freak show, and the freaks are in charge.
Gerald, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, available online at trendsjournal.com. He was speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Coming up, Sean Broderick, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclical, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
My guest is Sean Broderick. He's the senior editor at WeissRatings.com. He's speaking to us from Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Sean, can you tell us a little bit about Weiss Ratings? What do you guys cover?
We cover everything. We rate all sorts of stocks for both safety and potential performance. And I incorporate the Weiss Ratings into my choices. Now, sometimes when you're doing smaller stocks, their potential isn't reflected in the Weiss Ratings yet. But for the larger stocks, it does a great job of actually figuring out which ones are doing well, which ones aren't. I love using that as a backdrop, especially for, like, say, oil stocks. I mean, if you're looking for stocks that are incredibly oversold right now and yet pay good dividends, so you're paid to wait until you're right, you know, you would look in the energy sector, which is the beaten down sector this year. And some of it, I can understand why people are afraid of maybe new potential supply and lack of demand with what's going on in China. But really, the way these companies have streamlined operations, cut costs and stuff, there are a bunch of them that are money-making machines. And so I would just use the Weiss Ratings to say, all right, which one of these are best? And then once I have a handful, then I can roll up my shirt sleeves and, like, actually look into the individual stocks themselves. We have publications that just recommend stocks based on the Weiss Ratings, but I like to take it one step further than that. For me, it's a good place to start.
Now, you cover more than just the stock market. Do you have other newsletters that cover other topics?
Crypto and stuff like that. We cover a lot of stuff, yeah, but I don't write those. For one thing, I'm a hard asset guy. I am a dinosaur, and so these kids will be dancing around talking about crypto coins that are based on clowns or dogs or something like that on there. You got to be kidding me. I'm just too old for that. It just looks like silliness to me, but I can't argue with the results. They're doing extraordinarily well, so good for them. It's just I'm too old for that kind of stuff.
Right. So gold has really been a monster until recently. What's the story there?
Until recently, well, yeah. You and I are talking on Thursday, and gold's breaking out to a new high, my friend.
Oh, well, that's recent.
Yeah, that is recent. It's good. Silver's lagging, but I believe silver's going to play catch-up in a big way. We have a bunch of gold and silver positions. Today, my silver positions are outperforming gold. We will see how they end the week, because, as you know, silver is the drama queen of the precious metals market. And when things are going up, silver really outperforms. It's hitting the ceiling. It's leaving gold in the dust. When things are going down, Silver's the one lying on the floor, crying and bawling its eyes out and having a terrible time. So, but in my personal portfolio, I am making the bets on silver because I'm a madman who takes risks. But, I mean, you should look at the cash flow of some of these gold miners. My God, they're fantastic. If you can find, say, a gold miner that pays a dividend, not many do, some do, though, and you were looking to have a little safety in your portfolio because, I don't know if you know this, but we have an election coming up in the United States, and the potential things that could happen as a result of that, if like people don't accept the results and stuff, they're actually quite scary. So if you want to get a little safety in your portfolio, and certainly the central banks of the world do, they are buying gold hand over fist. What do they know, right? But they are buying a lot of gold. Central banks do not buy silver. However, silver is an industrial metal really in demand for, say, solar panels, stuff like that, because if it's a great electrical conductor. So it's just enormous industrial demand really ramping up. So I like both metals. I think they look great. Apparently the market's agreeing with me today with prices taking off. And that's not the only metal doing well. We'll have to talk about uranium in a bit as well.
What about other precious metals like palladium and platinum?
You know, certainly platinum's rallying. It's looking quite nice. It's up to 977 as you and I talk. Palladium's rallying. The problem is these are much smaller markets, you know, and like there's only a very few miners. Even trading the futures is just not as liquid as, say, well, certainly as gold or as liquid as silver. You could also look at copper, which has really been lagging, but that's mainly due to the fears that China hasn't sorted things out. My personal opinion, and again, any opinion is personal, and this is just how I feel, I can't believe that the mandarins in like Beijing are going to sit on their hands and watch their economy slide off a ledge. I think they're going to pour money into this, and we aren't seeing that reflected in silver, but there could be some excellent opportunities there. I meant to say copper. We aren't seeing that reflected in copper yet, but there could be some excellent opportunities there. However, right now, I don't own any copper stocks, and just because I'm still positioning in silver and gold miners that I think are just leveraged to an enormous bull run we are embarking on right now.
Oh, one of China's problem was they built all those empty cities that nobody wants to live in.
I've heard that complaint forever. Now, it is true that pretty much the government set things up so that if you had wealth, you poured it into new apartments, and these apartment buildings were empty. And basically, when you bought an apartment there, you just bought the shell, and then you'd have to fix it up, and that boosted demand for all sorts of materials. And they have probably overbuilt. Will they catch up? I saw a video of them, like, actually detonating one building after another. They seem to be overbuilt. At some point, they will get to a balance in that market. So I'm actually not that worried about it. So I don't worry about China as much as some people do. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the China bears are absolutely right. But the way I'm looking at it, the global economy is in a soft spot, but it's not in recession, and I don't think a recession is coming. That means that we are going to see improvement in China because it sells to the world. So, you know, if the global economy isn't going into recession, that means China has plenty of buyers for its goods. And so I'm not that worried about it, frankly. What I'm more worried about is just basically the fact that central banks around the world can inflate away their problems, and there's hidden inflation. There isn't just the headline reported inflation. I believe the central banks know this. I believe that's why one of the reasons, they have other reasons why they are buying so much gold, is they just need to have that backstop in case things go wrong. I'm hoping nothing goes wrong. It would screw me up tremendously if things did go wrong, but at least I'm positioned with a little bit of a life belt in case things do go wrong. And that life belt is made out of gold and silver.
With the interest rates, how important is it for the Fed to cut, and is it?
It is. It's going slower than many people, including me, would like. I was explaining to a colleague the other day, the Fed drags its more feet than the cast of a Romero zombie movie. You know, I mean, and so they are behind the curve. Everybody knows they're behind the curve, but they seem to be comfortable behind the curve. They don't want to overreact, I guess. And so they should cut by 50 in, what is it, less than a week as you and I talk. But they won't. They'll only cut by 25. That said, there's a lot more cuts coming up. The market is pricing in, and yes, before we get a lot of angry emails, I know the market pricing could be wrong, but the market is pricing in about 2.4% of rate cuts this year and next year. That's a lot of cuts that will weigh on the U.S. dollar, and that should boost alternatives to the U.S. dollar like gold and silver.
Now, are you surprised, going back to silver, that the price hasn't gone up? Because solar panels are everywhere. There's a big demand for them. And I also saw an article that said solar panels are now cheap. You might as well build your buildings out of them because they're more affordable than other building materials.
Right. I've seen that, too. That's actually a great observation. The thing is that there is actually a glut of, like, solar panels in the market right now, and so I think that's one of the things weighing on silver is people expect to see orders canceled and like stuff like that. So we'll have to see how it goes. But again, when precious metals run, silver usually outperforms gold. That's why I'm making the big bets in silver. So far we're doing okay. I just think we can do a lot better, and we'll have to see how things work out over the next year. But I expect new highs for gold near $3,000 an ounce. I expect silver to go much higher. And percentage-wise, I expect silver to outperform gold. But we'll have to see how it works out.
Why do you think people are so reluctant to look at the silver picture?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe they're following central banks. Maybe they're listening to their brokers, you know. Well, of course, I'm really dating myself when I talk about the Hunt brothers.
Oh, I know them.
We have had disasters in the silver market before. Maybe people are more wary of that. I don't know. I think silver is a great thing to have. If you're stacking gold and silver against, you know, things going really, really wrong in the financial system, would you rather be the guy paying for your groceries with silver or with gold? Because paying with gold makes you a target, the way I look at it. So that's one reason why I personally have a lot more physical silver than I do gold. Also because it's much cheaper, but I mean, you know, just that's the thing I would like to have. I do have gold, though. Of course I do. Because, again, that's the smart thing to do. And we'll have to see how things go. You know, it's really not what we do that matters. What matters is what people in China and India do. Those are the two big markets where people have a cultural affinity to precious metals, and they buy a lot of it. Now, one of the things that has probably been holding the gold market back is the fact that we've had economic weakness in China. But if China can sort things out and actually provide enough stimulus that their economy starts to find footing again, if they start to get economic growth again, that's probably going to light another fire under the gold market, you know, because then people there have more money to buy gold and they have a cultural affinity to gold. So that's one more thing to keep in mind.
Are countries like Canada and the UK, which sold off their gold at bargain prices a dozen or so years ago, more than that, are they going to regret not holding gold like China and India and Russia do?
Oh, I don't know. And like, yeah, I know people are mad about that. God, I saw so much on the internet. But at some point, we've become old men yelling at clouds. You know, we have to look at the opportunities in front of us. I see opportunities in precious metals. I see opportunities in energy because oil recently hit the low that it put in back in March of last year. It was down there for a week, and then it went on a bull run. I don't know if we're going to have the same thing, but we know that history does not repeat, but it sometimes rhymes. I think oil looks super cheap right here, so I'm really bullish on oil. But that's all one part of what I do, but I'm also big into the tech super cycle, and we are seeing a new tech super cycle right now. It's led by AI, but there's a lot more to it than AI, and we are seeing just things turn over. I mean, heck, I was looking at the stock of, like, Dell Computer just to drag something out of the cobwebs in the attic recently. But, I mean, they're doing a lot of stuff beyond what you think of the, like, computer box on your desktop. They're doing a lot of things for AI, data centers, you name it. There's just a boom in that whole business. And things like cybersecurity, stuff like that, there are tremendous opportunities in there. So, I mean, I know we often talk about, like, hard assets, physical commodities, gold, silver, oil, but do not ignore what's going on in the tech market right now, because we had a big tech run-up, and I sold my big tech stocks in early July, and thank God I did, because they sold off big time. But now they're starting to come back. Beyond that, there are other ancillary tech stocks that maybe didn't get the big run before, but they're poised for it now. So that's one other thing people should be looking at, too. I'll have a whole presentation on this at the New Orleans Investment Conference in November, which I highly recommend to anyone, not just my presentation, but I mean the entire conference. It is going to be their 50th anniversary New Orleans Investment Conference, and that should be a great time. Well, New Orleans is always a great time, but it should be a very interesting conference. That's what I'm saying. And I'll probably be the one guy talking about tech there. You know, it's a hard assets heavy conference. But I just think that this tech supercycle, which we have entered into, you know, doesn't go in a straight line. We've had a little pullback, but you want to buy the pullbacks in a supercycle, and that's what people should be doing.
You said uranium is something to keep a close eye on. Why?
Well, because Grand Emperor Putin recently mentioned that he thought Russia should restrict its exports of uranium, nickel, and titanium. And so that happened Wednesday overnight in Russia. And so when the uranium markets woke up in the West on Wednesday, uranium leverage stocks just soared. And then at the end of the day, which was really interesting, a lot of people shorted those stocks because they said, okay, it's a one-day thing. It's a reaction to Putin and all that stuff. And then what happened Thursday? All those stocks went higher again. And so that means that the shorts had to cover, and they're all dealing with that. And, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But here's the thing. The uranium market has been poised for a breakout for quite some time. There was softness in the spot market so that long-term prices, which had been rising anyway, actually got to parity with the spot price, which almost never happened. Usually spot prices are either much higher or much lower. But it was weird how that happened. Now I think because of the potential for tightness, not exactly tightness right now. We're still getting plenty of supply out of like Kazakhstan and Russia, though that could change. But the potential for tightness is probably going to get people more excited longer term in the uranium market. And that is great news for some stocks we hold and other stocks we could buy that were kind of beaten down. They look like bargains. What I buy, though, is I don't buy explorers. And I know that ticks off a lot of listeners to these programs that I talk to because they're all about particular uranium explorers. But especially in this kind of market, what is amazing to me is how cheap producers and developers actually trade. They trade dirt cheap. Producers, certainly. Developers, which will have production coming online, and they will have ready buyers for that stuff. I mean, you can buy them for a dime on the dollar. So I think people should be looking at uranium stocks, absolutely.
Now, if Putin's going to restrict nickel and titanium, have those gone up?
You know, I mean, I haven't looked at those markets. Titanium market's hard to play here in the West. Good luck on it. Nickel, there are some nickel companies, you know, but it's usually a byproduct of something else. So I wouldn't worry about that so much, though. If, like, someone really wants to do the work, do the digging, go ahead. You're probably going to find a nickel explorer. And as I said, I'm really not buying explorers. That ticks a lot of people off, but I think I'm better off for it.
Going back to crude, Hurricane Francine has shut down a number of refineries and oil rigs in the Gulf. Is that going to have a temporary boost to crude prices, or will it cause a shortage, or is there so much in storage we don't have to worry?
Well, actually, the storage in the U.S. has been tightening up. I don't know about storage in Canada. The storm was not a strong storm, and it is one of the things that boosted oil prices off that March low, and that's one reason that I'm not buying oil stocks right now, because I'm waiting to see what happens once the storm passes. If once the storm passes, oil prices keep going down, maybe they'll find a lower bottom. I need oil prices to turn up convincingly before I start buying new positions or adding to existing positions. But that is something that I want to do. I do think oil prices are cheap now.
The devil's tobacco, marijuana. Is that going to be...
What's the story there? I am turning more bullish on that. Now, here's the thing. And I was quite disappointed because the earliest that the Drug Enforcement Agency could reschedule cannabis from being on the same level as heroin to being something much less scary, like, say, steroids, was that the earliest they could have done that was August. And I thought they would. But being cowards, what they did was they pushed the decision off to December. So that hammered the cannabis stocks, I should say U.S. cannabis stocks, which had been picking up in advance of that. And so, but I think now many look super cheap. December isn't that far away. Hell, the November election's right around the corner. And then December's coming, and so we should have some kind of a ruling by then. I expect the ruling to be positive, and so I do want to own, and I do own cannabis stocks right now. Am I underwater? A little bit. That's okay. I can always add two positions if we get another dip, but I'm glad I'm in them now, and I'll probably buy more later.
Sean, anything else you think we should be keeping a really close eye on right now?
No. Let me tell you what my outlook for the market is, and I'd be glad to be proven wrong on it. But I think that, at least here in the U.S., and I hate to be so U.S.-centric because I know you have many Canadian listeners, but, you know, the U.S. market is the big dog, so you kind of have to watch it. And I think that there's so much uncertainty about our election, who will win, that that's really going to keep a lot of people from investing money until the election is resolved, either by having a clear winner before the election or the actual election itself. And so I expect things to go sideways to down until we actually get to the election. We're having a nice update now, but I still expect sideways to down action. The election will make things clear, because then somebody's plans for the economy, for taxes, for deductions, for investment, that's all going to be the clear winner. And so once we have that clarity, I think money's going to come pouring back into this market, especially if interest rates are coming down. Because one of the things holding back the stock market now, and just a side note, and I hate to take so many sidetracks, I know there are probably people yelling at their computers or their radios now saying, wait a minute, you know, the price earnings of the market is like very high. And you're not wrong. The thing is, it can go a lot higher, especially if earnings look to go higher. And so what's holding things back now is this uncertainty. And I think money is going to really be put back into the market after the election happens, because there's so much potential for certain industries after the election. And so I'm not looking for much to happen between now and the election, which is what no one who's trying to get people to invest in this market should say, but I don't care what people do. You know, I'm paid by my company. I literally do not care what your listeners do. They have to make up their own investment decisions for themselves. And the way that I'm playing it, for my subscribers, is we are going to be down, maybe downward, maybe sideways until the election, but then we're going to have things lift off. We might have some things move higher before then. I'm actually positioning them in some things which either pay dividends or otherwise have a moat around them that actually protects those stocks, but they will do well. And so I think that big move is coming. It'll happen around or after election day. And so I think that's what people should look for. But again, what any person listening to this has to decide for themselves is how much risk they want to be exposed to and what kind of opportunities they want to position for now or else wait for later. It's all up to the individual, I wish everyone good luck. And it's a crazy, frustrating market right now, but I think we'll have clarity after Election Day.
By the way, how can people sign up for your services?
Well, if they go to WeissRatings.com, nose around there, you should find Wealth Megatrends. That is my monthly newsletter, which is a great place to start. It's way, way worth more than the price we actually charge for it. I swear to God, if you knew how cheap it is, you would be saying this guy is insane, and you're probably right. But I mean, we just have winner after winner in that. So look for that one, Wealth Megatrends. Then I have premium services as well. But start with Wealth Megatrends. See what you think. You shouldn't buy something just because some crazy guy on the radio or on the internet talks about it. Do some research yourself. But I think you'll find the research that we do at Weiss Ratings is excellent, and the Weiss Ratings themselves are one of the most useful tools you will find out there.
Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Sean Broderick, senior editor at WeissRatings.com. He was speaking to us from Florida. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Gerald Celente, and Sean Broderick. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.